Okay, so what I've decided to concentrate on in the talk, in this talk, is on orbital resonances in extrasolar planetary systems. Another topic that I've been working on is on a possible primordial origin for the Laplace resonance among the Galilean satellites. And if you ever draft Stan to talk, I hope he'll talk about that. So let me just briefly remind you, so there are now, depending on who's counting, there are something like 11 known multiple planet systems. And so in that 11 systems, there are three pairs of planets that are known or suspected to be in mean motion resonances. And the, by far the best case is the one about the pair about Gliese 876, which are in 2-to-1 resonance. And the pair about HD 82943 is also suspected to be in 2-to-1. And the two inner two planets about 55 Cancri are probably in 3-to-1. And so I'll talk about the variety of 2-to-1 resonance configurations that you could find. And what they might tell you about the origin of the orbital resonances. Another part that I'll hopefully get around to is that, so other than these ones that are in mean motion resonances, almost all of the remaining pairs of adjacent planets have semi-major axis ratio less than a third, and five of those actually have less than a tenth. And so something that I worked on last year was on secular evolution of hierarchical planetary systems. And I'll mention something about secular ellipsoidal resonance in that situation. Okay, so most of you are probably familiar with this idea that, so this is from a picture from Jeff Brighton's work with Doug and others. And so in the situation where you have two planets in a gas, in a protoplanetary disk, what they've shown, and Willie Clay also did some simulation like this, that the gas in between the two planets are evacuated on a fairly short time scale, and you ended up with an outer disk outside the outer planet, and maybe an inner disk inside the inner planet. And so the torque is then pushing the two planets towards each other. And so the conversion migration then can result in capture into mean motion resonances, right? So one of the thing, so what I'm showing you here are a set of calculations that are basically, instead of doing complicated hydrodynamic simulation, all I'm doing are free body integrations, where I've put in an extra term to force the outer planet to migrate inward. And so you can see it, and this is for a calculation where the planets are initially on coplanar orbits, and they have constant masses. And so you see, in this situation, you see as the inner planet migrate inward, it's captured into 2-to-1 resonance. And you see that the two mean motion resonance variables, eccentricity time mean motion resonance variables, are first captured into the 0 degree, theta 1, 0 degree, and theta 2, 180 degree configuration. Yeah. By design, because I started them all exactly coplanar. Yeah. And I'll actually come back to that point. So this 0 degree, 180 degree configuration is the one that we were familiar with from solar system in the case of Io and Europa. And that's this configuration up here with the apsides anti-aligned and the conjunctions occurring when the inner planet is at periapse and the outer planet is apoapse. And let me just start the animation that illustrates what's going on with the precession. And what you see also while you were looking at that, the other thing, so as the eccentricities, as you drive the system deeper and deeper into resonance, you see that the resonance configuration actually switch over to the 0 degree configuration, which is this one here with the apsis line. And this is actually the configuration that Gliese 876 is in, and the mass ratio here, M1 over M2 of the planet about 0.3, is roughly what GGA 76 is. And so that is the configuration that you find Gliese 876 in. Okay. So what you find is that basically the main determining factor of what configurations you could get in the 2-to-1 resonance at high eccentricities is basically the mass ratio of the planet. And so this is a case where M1 over M2 is 1.5. And you see that in a sort of intermediate region in eccentricity, you get these asymmetric libration configurations, which are, for those of you who were here when Eugene gave his talk on the Kuiper belt, he also mentioned asymmetric librations. And so these are sort of the two-planet generalization of the, in his case, it's restricted free-body problem. So this is sort of the two-planet generalization of those asymmetric configurations. And that's one example of what the so in this case, the apsides are almost 90 degrees from one another, and the conjunction happened at some other angle. Okay. And this is the case where with an even more extreme mass ratio of M1 over M2, about 5, and you see that once the system leave the 0 degree, 180 degree configuration at small eccentricity, it just stays in these asymmetric libration for the whole time. And at high eccentricity, you actually get these asymmetric libration configurations with intersecting orbits. They are actually relatively stable. So in this integration, eventually the system becomes unstable. And actually, let me show you this. Hopefully it will start. There. In this case? I think it's one of the configuration we're near the end here. Sorry? No, so actually, eventually, it does become unstable because they actually do come very close, right about there. Sorry? No, actually, they. I have had cases where they have, you know, some. It's not with some amplitude of librations, and they seem to be stable. I'll have to check. I'm not absolutely sure.
But in this case, you're still pushing them, and you didn't stop them and see if they could integrate for a while.
I haven't checked this particular one. I've checked the other asymmetric. I haven't checked this one.
But the answer is you can get things like this that are definitely
stable. Yeah.
With
eccentricities.
I guess so, because actually, right, what I've noticed is that if you go along this, once it goes, so originally it's on non-intersecting orbit, and then it switches over at high eccentricity to intersecting orbits. And as it goes along that sequence, I think they get closer and closer about that point. And so eventually it does become unstable. Yeah. So no, that one did become unstable. That's what I was saying. So. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure if I took that particular configuration that I was showing you and just integrate that without migration, I'm pretty sure that one is stable. It's the continuing migration forcing it deeper and deeper into resonance that eventually it becomes unstable. Sorry? I can check, but I'm pretty sure it's stable.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So it turns. So one of the ways you could summarize these, or actually in a plot of E1 over E1 and E2, that one is 5. Yeah. So it's one of these. Actually, it's this trajectory there. So it's somewhere up there. It's one of the asymmetric libration with intersecting orbits. In fact, so most of these one with high E2 have intersecting orbits. So these are the configurations you could get by differential migration of coplanar configurations with constant masses. Okay, and it turns out that there are...
Excuse me,
yeah.
This differential migration, I thought you're only driving one of them.
Yeah, it doesn't matter though, which way you could do it, whichever way you like.
Are you driving both of them, or are you driving only
one? Those particular calculations, I just drive one. But I've done calculation for Gliese 7-6 that we drive both.
And the hot one?
Sorry?
The inward.
Yeah.
Sorry?
The outer one.
The inward. Outer one inward, yeah.
So the orbits have to
but it, the, yeah, so basically these are convert. So as long as you have situation where the orbits are converging by either outer one migrating inward or inward one outward or both, this shouldn't be sensitive. Okay, so so you can see in this plot that there's just this empty region in E1, E2 plane. And it turns out that by doing some combination of,
I thought the E1 and E2 are evolving.
Yeah, so sorry. Yeah, so if you look at, so this is for a particular M1 over M2. And so this is a trajectory as you drive it deeper and deeper into resonance. It goes along a line like this. So the 0.3 is the one that's going from the IO Europa pipe configuration, the GGA 7-6, and it stays in that. And these are the ones that go from IO Europa to asymmetric libration, and the whole trajectory is asymmetric for high eccentricity.
So, but this E1 and E2 go through a libration of some sort? I mean,
yeah, it's just very small libration amplitude here. It's just I've these calculations, I actually use relatively small total mass of the planet. And so they once they get captured, they stay actually in very small libration amplitude. Yeah. I have plots where I've actually done calculation where the total mass of planets is of order like what's in GGA 7-6. And what you would then see is sort of wavy libration around these trajectory, larger amplitude librations. Sorry? I'm not sure there's an explanation for them, but this is the range. The red ones are the one that go from anti-symmetric, anti-aligned configuration to the aligned configuration. And the green one are the ones that go from anti-symmetric to symmetric libration like the GGA 7-6, and then it goes into asymmetric libration. And then it returns to symmetric libration. And these blue ones are the ones that go from the IO Europa type configuration and just once it leaves that from a small eccentricity, it goes into asymmetric libration. So that's just the classification. I'm not sure there's a good explanation for why the different mass ratio give you these particular. So this is small. It doesn't matter what the migration speed is, as long as it's relatively small.
There's no eccentricity benefiting from it.
So these calculations don't, right? So I'll come back to that point actually. Right. So actually, what These are calculations where there's no eccentricity damping, and so what you would where you would find an actual system would be somewhere along these trajectories, depending on either when you stop the migration due to dispersal of the disk or how much eccentricity damping you have from planet disk interaction. So you would then find a system somewhere reaching some part along one of these trajectory. And I'll come back to that point on GGA76. So what I've done is by some combination, I've actually done some calculations to try to find resonance configurations in that empty part of the E1, E2 plane. And it turns out that there are. And so these are these ones are the asymmetric librations, and these ones are the one with GJ76 type symmetric configuration. And there's an additional family of configuration like these ones, which are anti-symmetric and on intersecting orbits. And in fact, I actually know this particular one is definitely stable because I've actually looked at this one quite carefully. So there are these configurations that you couldn't get by the simple migration scenario where you have coplanar orbits and the planet stays on, and the planets have constant masses. And so but there are ways to get those. So what I've listed here is that if you actually find those configurations, depending on which one, you could get them by one of the three processes I've listed here. So either by changing the mass ratio of the planets during migration, then you can get these ones by doing that. And you could get this particular one from actually evolution through inclination resonance. And so there was a paper by Thomas and Lissauer where they actually study starting from slightly non-coplanar orbits and drive the system deeper and deeper into resonance. And what they found was that the system, at high enough eccentricity, the system could go into the inclination resonance. And in some of the plots, if you look at their paper, the system actually eventually pop out of inclination resonance. And when they pop out of inclination resonance, they actually go into that, into this configuration here. And finally, there's also the possibility that you could actually get resonance by multiple planet scattering in cloud planetary system. So by three of, if you find those type of configurations, those are then you know that something like one of these processes happened. Okay, so let me go back to the issue about eccentricity damping. So this is something we did that I did with Stan on GJ76, and so the calculation on the left is a calculation where I've only, again, put in migration, and there's no eccentricity damping. And the dashed line here is the observed eccentricity of the GJ76 system. And you see that once the system is captured into resonance, it very quickly exceeds the observed eccentricity of the, it's very easy, takes a very short amount of continued migration, and you get the eccentricity higher than the ones observed. And so what we did was we then put in eccentricity damping, and you find that, basically parameterize it by it as some fraction, some number times the migration rate. And you see with, in this case, with only inward migration of the outer planet and damping of the eccentricity of the outer planet, you need a damping ratio of almost 100 times the migration rate to get eccentricities that are like the observed eccentricity of that system. Sorry? If you you mean with higher eccentricity? Well, then I think your problem is worse, right? Because it once you get captured, then you have even takes. Well, I suppose it depends. Sorry. Now, once you get captured, then the driving it. Once you have captured the Tudorian resonance, then the eccentricities are driven up. And so, if you started with high eccentricity, then it takes even less time to arrive at the observed eccentricities, right?
The problem here is, I mean, if you look at this eccentricity venting time, it's only 200 years, right?
If you take the canonical migration.
I'm picking what.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. Sorry, yeah.
It's 200 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that possible?
Well, that's what I want to ask. So that's the question I have. Is so there.
You see, the thing is that when you put in formulas like that, there's two or three shortcomings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one shortcoming is the gravitational potential of the disk is not taking into account, right? They don't do that much driving.
Yeah.
Okay, the gravitational potential of the disk makes some difference.
You mean in terms of the precession?
Precession. Okay.
But I think Norm has actually done some work with including that, isn't it?
It makes some difference in detail.
Yeah, but it's not true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You spin the outer orbit, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
Well, you got the disk, so there's a big pressure reduces in the outer orbit. The orbit.
Yeah.
So the orbit just swoops around.
Right.
Like, so you guys only have the perception
set
by the
inner plane,
but the disk actually.
I remember talking with you about this, and I thought you said you did some work and it didn't make a big difference.
No, it makes
a big difference.
It can affect the capture probability. It can affect which one.
You probably don't get captured into both. Do you
get captured into one resonance
and not the other. Yeah.
Now, eventually, if you keep pushing it,
right,
then you get locked in again.
Right.
But so I can do what you keep down. You can prevent the out of it from driving into the inner guy. I think that's way I was trying to do it. You only get one resonance. You only pump up the one guy, not the other. And that does happen for a while. But it can make a substantial difference. Basically,
when
you spin the outer orbit, you split the resonance a lot farther than you think.
So
you can get
closer
to the
one. So you're saying
it's
the precession reduced by
the
subtract
by
the
gap. Yeah. Let's see, the outer one is the one that's more massive in this case.
Exactly. You can put that
so
up.
So you separate.
Yeah, it's a slick thing. And depends on what you think the size of the gap is, depends on the viscosity of the disk. And if you allow yourself to have a fairly substantial viscosity, it's a really big effect. It's surprising.
But it doesn't prevent capture in the two one.
It doesn't prevent capture in the one of the two or, but it does prevent it in the other one.
Let's see, does it actually go in the right way? Because the outer one is the more massive one, right? So
it's okay, yeah.
No, but then you could actually end up with capture. Probably you could end up getting capture into the fatal one, the eccentricity variable for the inner planet, right? Because you're increasing precession rate
of
the outer guy.
The other important effect.
Yeah.
Okay. This is just the capture.
Mm-hmm.
What we see is not necessarily the condition at the time of the capture, because in the meantime something else happened. From when it was formed to today. The disk went away.
Yes.
Once it gets captured, it ends up not having a big effect.
There are a couple of things.
Depends on how close to saturated you are.
Well, fair enough, but now it's pretty deep there. Okay, but again, you can't push it like you've been by having the disk go away. But probably you can keep it in the beginning.
Well, there's another point, which is that the libration amplitude in this system is tiny.
That's not to say it's way deeper. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it is.
And I was talking with Greg, and he said it's now even smaller than the fit that he had previously, the libration amplitude.
See, but that suggests it migrated along.
Yeah. Right, so in this picture, it would be natural. If you have this picture, then you have naturally very small libration amplitude. It is it's like 50 orbits of the outer one, so it's which is 60
well,
days.
Well,
yeah, so it's a year.
It's
right.
Like a year.
Yeah, it's a year. It's the precession rate. Yeah. So that's the question that I want to raise. And So it or the, no, I guess you're suggesting that there may be other ways other than just the...
I'm just asking questions.
But what I've listed here are that the eccentricities could be either due to just stopping. So you have to either have very good matching of the capture time compared to when the migration stopped, or that you need a lot of eccentricity damping from planet disinteraction.
Or probably something else.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I said one possibility is that if you migrated that long away, there may be others that got captured into other type of resonances, and that became unstable, could have perturbed the system a little bit. So, you know, for example, I just like the Laplace resonance, I guess, except you have, in the Laplace resonance, you have damping, you have tidal damping, but supposing this system that you don't have tidal damping, but and just completely wild speculation, okay, don't take this as a proof in any way, that I could have excited the eccentricity. And one of the three resonant planets became unstable, goes away, takes away a lot of the energy without taking away the angular momentum. So the system that gets left behind had, you know, resulted in a eccentricity damping. I don't even have to have a three-way resonance. I could have another planet further out. And then during the depletion of the disk, sweeping secular resonance comes along. And it soaks up angular momentum from the resonant binary. And I take it away from the third guy. That becomes very eccentric. Okay, it would be very nice. We have, you know,
but I wonder if you
form two, you may as well form three.
But I wonder if you could get actually such a small aberration amplitude by that process.
Well, you know, this is all speculation, sheer speculation, as I said. But if you want to soak angular momentum away from the system, and that's what you mean by having a small eccentricity, I can think of ways that I can soak away from these two and give it to somebody else.
Okay, so let me move on to the other part of the talk. So something else that I've been working on is on secular evolution of hierarchical planetary systems. So what we were using basically was the octuple level secular perturbation theory, and that was something that was developed by, among other people, Fred and Eric, and I think Rosemary and Doug has a slightly different version of this theory. And essentially, basically, it's a it's just different. I think you use a different variable and just do orbit averaging, right? Right. I believe they do, but yeah. It's basically based on an expansion on in the semi-major axis ratio to order third power and orbit averaging, and the advantage of this perturbation theory, unlike the Laplace or Lagrange theory, is that it doesn't rely on expansion in eccentricity or inclination. So it is applicable to system with high orbital eccentricities and inclination. And the particular, what we focus on again is specifically on the coplanar system. And that in this theory, the coplanar system problem actually is reduced to one degree of freedom. And one thing that's we were able to derive based on this from this theory was a condition for the phase space to be basically completely dominated by libration of the secular rest, epsilon rest. So this is the difference in the epsilon longitude. And what we found from this theory was that if that ratio lambda of L1 over L2, which are the Delaunay variables L1, L2, which are the circular orbit angular momentum for that semi-major axis and mass. What we found was that when that ratio is roughly, it's approximately equal to a critical value that depends on the total angular momentum of the system, then the phase space is essentially completely dominated by libration of the epsilon longitude about either 0 degree or 180 degree. And so we looked at two particular systems. One is HD168443. And that one has this parameter lambda, which is very far from the critical value. And so you can see from these diagrams, so the red line is the actual system, trajectory for the actual system, and the other lines are for systems with the same total angular momentum. And you can see here that basically the libration islands are relatively small, and the actual system itself is circulating. And the other system we looked at is this one, which was really nice. We were working on the paper when this system was discovered. And so it turns out to have actually the value of lambda almost exactly the same as lambda crit. And you look at the phase space diagram, it is the red line is the actual system. And so it is in a situation where the phase space is entirely occupied by libration about either 0 degree or 180 degree. And this particular system is actually, on average, anti-alignment with a fairly large libration amplitude.
But isn't that always the case?
In what sense?
I mean, if you do first order secular perturbation theory, it always oscillates or libra-. I mean, if it either librates, it's either aligned or anti-aligned, isn't it?
In this situation, yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
No, but the point is that in this situation you don't have, or very very little of it is circulation. It's entirely libration.
But what is so significant about that?
Well, so here's
I'm not sure. I find it very surprising with that.
Well, you have to have the right. So here's the question, right? So in this particular situation, it is in epsilon anti-alignment. And we know of at least one other system, Epsilon Andromedae, where the outer two planets are in epsilon alignment. And norm and...
But arises so naturally.
Well...
If you have a libration, that's, instead of circulation, that's always what you would get, right? I mean, just...
No, but the question is it if you... In the case of epsilon Andromedae,
right.
In that case, a large part of this of the phase space is circulation. But it's not quite this, but it's similar to this, right? Epsilon Andromedae, and so epsilon Andromedae is actually in epsilon alignment. And so, for example, Norm and Eugene and I guess Ren Nu also wrote a paper about. But I guess your mechanism is exciting the eccentricity, and then you can start from circulation and ending up in libration, right? But in this system, it would seem that in this case, like you don't need an explanation, right? The parameters are such that you really don't have no choice, and so the question is, do these epsilon secular resonance actually require any sort of explanation? So we have two systems. One
requires an explanation. The other looks like it does require something.
Because it's a small region of phase.
Right.
Yeah. But if I'm correct, even in that case, the libration amplitude is still not small, right?
Not tiny, though.
Yeah.
So it could just form.
Actually, there's a very small survival range for that epsilon Andromeda system. And the reason for it is because not only, I mean, it's a three planet system,
mm-hmm.
right? And to preserve the innermost planet, you really need, you requires enormous amount of care. You need to have a fast spin when the star was born, okay? Because today, the innermost planet, the eccentricity is very small, well, you can override it with relativity. But when the disk went away, there's an additional sweeping secular resonance, which would be very destructive to the innermost planet. And the fact that it survived in that configuration at all requires the initial quadruple moment of the star to be relatively large. So it requires a fast spin. The spin period has to be shorter than about a day.
Okay, so.
Which would suggest that there wasn't a difference between those two.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. But you just have to have a fast spin. But a lot of what it suggests is that many systems like that may have had small objects near the star that perished during the depletion of the disk.
But that's what I'm saying, it's a bit of a paradox there, because if it's got rapid spin, it would have a big magnetic field, and if there was a disk close in, it would have gotten coupled.
Yeah. Or alternatively, in order to have a rapid spin, you must have very little magnetic field. So it doesn't cut off a hole.
But the magnetic field comes about naturally because of the spin, not the other way around. Right?
Well, but on the other hand, in order for you to, if you had a strong magnetic field, you would open up a magnetosphere which would couple with a disk. And then you would. That's one possibility. But
then you have to worry about the planet suffering from the removal of the disk.
That's one possibility. Or no magnetic field.
Boy, most stars have magnetic fields if they're...
It's true. But on the other hand, in these early days...
they have even more magnetic fields.
Real well.
Yes.
Actually, we have a result that if your parameter lambda equal to 1, then all the phase space are library. But only at that parameter.
Sorry, say that again.
We have
Is that in the Snoilly's entropy limit? Because it does reduce to one in the case where you're nearly circular orbits. That criterion does reduce to one.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I should find out from you. Yeah. Well, I'm done, actually. Yeah.
Okay.